Blog Talk Radio.
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
I love you so badly.
They're solid plastic, so don't settle for imitation.
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Welcome to Ringside Wrap,
a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you the latest news and information on major pro wrestling and MMA promotions, the occasional history lesson, and interviews with legends of yesterday and stars of today. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Ringside Wrap.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Ringside Wrap on this Wednesday, August 1st, 2012, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the East Coast. I am Mike Sempervivi, going to be joined on the line very soon, hopefully here, by the legendary Les Thatcher, and we'll be talking about everything that's been going on in the world of professional wrestling and maybe even a little bit in MMA and possibly even in the Olympics. Who knows? But the meat and potatoes of this show is going to be a guest that I've been looking forward to having on for a long, long time. We always mention his book on this show. In fact, if you go to ringsiderap.com, there's the Dirty Dozen list that's up there for myself and Les and Rich Tate as well. And we all, I believe, have the National Wrestling Alliance, the untold story of the monopoly that strangled professional wrestling. On our list, and the author of that book, Tim Hornbaker, is going to be on with us at about 8:30, and he's going to be talking about his new book that he's got out, The Legends of Pro Wrestling, 150 Years of Headlocks, Body Slams, and Pile Drivers. And with that being said, joining us on the line right now, the legendary Les Thatcher. And Les, how are you this evening?
I'm 150 years old. I'm fine.
Isn't that kind of day?
Yeah. And my memory is still pretty decent. No, I'm fine, Mike. I'm enjoying the weather in North Carolina, nice cool mornings and cool evenings, and I like it. I like it. And what's good with you in the wrestling business? You know what? I don't know if you noticed, if you were aware of this or not, but did you know that Stephanie McMahon had beat up on Paul Heyman?
I got that impression, and it's amazing. 2 weeks ago when she came back, I was like, I know she's gotten a lot of work done, but, I know a lot of women who are very wealthy and in power positions who have gotten a lot of work done, but she looks fantastic. And then she jumped on Paul Heyman, started beating him up, and then I got to see it over and over and over again this week.
And
for
over.
Anybody out there, I think, that was wondering, did this have anything to do with something deep-seated between the McMahons and Paul Heyman?
I don't
the
know.
The answer is yes.
But what frightens me even more is that this extra hour is going to be rehash city, and I'm sure somebody in that company said, well, if they miss the first hour, we'll do it in the second hour, and miss the second hour, we'll do it in the third hour. And I think if this is what they're going to do, I'm not interested, and I just there's a million other things could be done. What I was saying, I told somebody earlier today, obviously they were in Cincinnati and I wasn't home, so I can't be blamed for setting the fire or anything, but I'm thinking something that I would do. It's in the human interest vein, and you, somebody can tell me, when I made the same suggestion earlier today, they said, they're national, they're not. I said, I don't give a damn what they are. But my thought was, within walking distance of U.S. Bank Arena in Cincinnati last Monday night. The Cincinnati Reds were in town. The Bengals are in, you know, their practice field is right down the street. Freedom Center, which is about black history, is within, all that's right there. Plus, we have a beautiful zoo, which is one probably one of the three best in the country. But I was thinking, why not take a little of this time and do some human interest with one of your baby faces each week, and you know, give your performers some depth other than the stupid interviews that you have them cut, or the silly segments that they do, or just what you see in the ring, and maybe you might get more of a bond between the fans watching them and the performers themselves.
Bless, at this point, I mean, is it, yeah, because you brought that up many times, and again, they don't seem to think any further than the end of their nose. They seem to be trapped in this bubble, and, you know, people try to give Triple H some credit going into his position of, oh, well, okay, yeah, he's got to do what Vince says, but maybe he's thinking outside of, are they... They're just so trapped in there that they don't even know what's out there anymore.
I don't
because
guess.
There's a lot of this Charlie Sheen being an A-list celebrity, which, you know, okay, I guess to some people he is, but I talked about this with Brian Alvarez, and it's like it depends on who you are, whether you look at Charlie Sheen as an A-list celebrity or a, you know, a C-list, you know, drug-addled alcoholic. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
I don't either, but, you know, to me, that's the repetitious part of all these rehash things. And I mean, there was some decent stuff, you know, I guess, on the show. I think maybe I'm doing a seminar this weekend. If Cena would like to come and actually learn how to throw a decent punch, I'd be more than happy to handle that. But now I will say that I thought AJ came across a little more, a little better than I had anticipated. And I know a couple people said, well, you know, she's a different person. Well, of course she is. She's a general manager. And they, you know, but at least in this persona, there's a little more credibility to her being a general manager. Had she been the gum-chewing, skipping idiot with the sneakers on, then I would have really thought they lost their minds. But so I think she's going to come across better. I think they made a mistake of making Del Rio go 7 or 8 minutes with an idiot. I think with all the, you know, here's something else that I've always done. I always look at what's going on currently in the news. Not that you try to tie everything in, but sometimes you try to stay away from what's currently in the news. And they didn't do that Monday night. The whole, you know, that whole tragedy out in Colorado with the kid that shot up the theater. One of the big things that was on the news was that the defense attorneys were trying to keep the prosecution from seeing what this kid had written to a psychiatrist, or, you know, in other words, because of the doctor-client privilege, right? You know, confidentiality thing. And now we are sitting in on a psychoanalysis of Daniel Bryant. And I'm so the minute, I mean, first of all, even if there was nothing in Colorado, when you see this, you know it's bullshit, right? I mean, what else is it? And I don't know how they, I don't know why they even bother to do it, because it's hokey. You know it. You know it's crap before it even starts. And yet they seem to think that this is entertaining, and it probably. And first of all, if we're talking about 9-year-olds, I'm not even sure a 9-year-old knows what the hell a psychiatrist is. So I don't know that it's entertaining to them, or that they care that he's obsessed with Charlie Sheen. And maybe I'm not even sure they know what obsessed means. But you know, things like that. I just thought, why? You know, it's just what I did like is I thought Punk's climbing on the desk shoot promo with Lawler was extremely good. And the reason I like it is that they allowed you, the fan or the viewer, whatever, to draw your own conclusions. He's not a heel. He's not a babyface. I know I heard Dave and Brian talk, well, you know, he's in the midst of a switch. Is he? I don't know.
No.
And the good part about that, why? I mean, you decide. I like that much better than, here, Twitter in and tell me what kind of match you want, which I don't like worth a damn. But, you know, I thought the scene, I thought the Punk thing was, I like it because you have to make up your own mind. And I would think that you're going to have him as a, pretty much as a tweener for a while, unless he just castrates somebody or, you know, or decapitates him. Don't
you? He should always be. That's something I tried to argue with Punk after he laid out The Rock, and somebody had sent out a tweet saying, I hope they don't think this is going to get Punk booed. And I was like, yeah, you're exactly right. Because if you already are a CM Punk fan, odds are, you know, a hardcore CM Punk fan probably doesn't like The Rock, sees the white teeth, the ex-football, all of those things that CM Punk, a real CM Punk fan would embody, they already hate him anyway. And CM Punk, for what anybody can say about his personality outside the ring and being, you know, a dick or whatever anybody wants to say about him, you know, obviously he had said some things that, you know, were insensitive, you know, that got himself in a little bit of trouble, but he's not going to drink and drive. He's not going to get in trouble. He is somebody you can put out there. He is only going to be a fan, you know, a popular star to a certain segment. He's not Cena or The Rock or an over-the-top guy like that. But he is very good at what he does, and when you leave him alone, he doesn't have to be a face or a heel. He just has to be that guy who goes out there and can get the best out of somebody. I thought the same thing about Randy Orton in a lot of ways. Have him just be a killer. Just, you know, don't have him be, you know, jumping up and down and doing the splits like he did that one time and playing to the crowd and that nonsense. No, he's a killer who's got one fault, which is he gets concussions and he gets a glazed over look. I mean, isn't, you know, the simplicity of that works, and CM Punk is perfect for that. And considering they need new stars and they need to bring people up, who better than a guy like CM Punk who's been all over the place and hones his craft well?
Well, you know, I think the good thing, too, knowing Punk, because he and Colt and Ace Steel worked a little bit for me, you know, when they were before they were major players. And I don't know him since then as well. But you know, he has that little sarcastic sense of humor and that sarcastic touch to his. And I guess I identify because I'm, you know, sometimes I'm similar to that myself. In fact, probably most of the time. But yeah, it comes across as real because it is. And, you know, and what he said, he told the truth. There was no, you know, ifs, ands, or buts. You didn't have to, but that's the neat thing, I think, Mike. You didn't have to agree or disagree. It was like, you know, he was the anchor man on the 6 o'clock news, you know, telling you, here's the way it is. You know, you decide whether, you know, it's Romney or Obama. And I like that. I don't think you have to necessarily put him in a category. I wouldn't want the entire roster that way, but I think, you know, one or two guys, you know, Cena's so cut and dried. Ziggler is so cut and dried. Most of the other guys are so cut and dried that I think it adds a dimension.
Absolutely. And we'll go to a break right here so we can come back and talk a little bit more before Tim Hornbaker comes on. But yeah, that's the one thing about, you know, CM Punk, too. If you're a CM Punk fan and he's telling the truth, you agree with him and go, yeah, 100%. But if you don't like him, it's the condescending tone and the way he says that truth, even if it is the truth, then that's what makes you hate him. But that's enough of that. And we'll be right back after this break on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we're committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Tempe's of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire.
Formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Semper, VB, and talking about Raw from this past Monday night. And Les, I actually just want to shift gears a little bit, just because news came out about John Laurinaitis actually stepping down from the role of Executive Vice President of Talent Relations, which probably that title is so well-known because Jim Ross held it for so long and in different periods. During his time in WWE, and it was talked about on TV during his run and pointed out it's a position that is very demanding. You're Vince's henchman, and there's lots that goes with it. J.J. Dillon's talked about it on this show before, but he steps down and goes back into a role of being a agent and a finish man, which from everything that I've ever heard about him in All Japan Pro Wrestling and from the dying days of WCW when he went there towards the very, very end, he's always been known as being a pretty darn good one and a very logical one. What you've actually had to deal directly, if I recall, with guys running a developmental territory with WWE, as far as that position and him stepping down and from what you've heard about it and him, what do you think about this whole scenario?
Well, you know, I'm curious as to how long he'll stay. And I don't mean like they'll fire him or anything, but make his own decision to leave. I'm sure, you know, he's been in this position over 10 years. I'm sure that he's probably financially, you know, comfortable. It's really probably an uncomfortable position to be put in. You're right about the finishes. John's good on finishes. He really is. But then you know what? There's a bunch of guys in the back are good on finishes. When was the last time you saw a good finish, Mike? Go ahead.
Good point.
Take an hour and get with me. Okay.
I have an easier time naming all the guys like Dean Malenko and everybody else in the back before I can actually name the finishes.
Well, sure. You know, do I know that Arn Anderson is a good finish man, or is Fiddly, or is Malenko, or is Jamie Noble? Jamie's got a little old school in him too. You know, he came up through started with Dean, and worked with Regal and WCW. Worked with a lot of good guys there. Spent a year with me. So the point, you know, the whole thing is, and I've heard as well, you know. Laurinaitis, who has he hired that's become a star? Who he has hired and who has become a star have no correlation, because training stars or making stars is a numbers game. He could have hired 100 of the greatest athletes of the last 10 years in American sports, but the trainers in Tampa or Laurinaitis himself are under the watchful eye of people who don't take bumps, and they have a criteria. Well, you first of all, that's not going to make anybody a star. It might by accident, but never on purpose. The trainers need to be allowed to be trainers. They need to be allowed to adjust these kids' learning curve or training schedules to suit their strengths and weaknesses. So, you know, to say that it's his fault that there's no great stars or it's not his, you know, is kind of silly, I think. Again, like I said about the finishes, it comes down to the micromanaging of the people that run the thing. It's like, you know, it's like Hunter. Helmsley, I think, has got a good head on his shoulders for the business. I know for a fact that a number of years ago, he talked to Harley with some regularity, because and he studied a lot of Harley race tapes because, you know, he wanted to learn. Now, that would tell you and I, if we were just casual viewers, that, my God, he must believe in that and want to make good heels like Harley Race. Well, when was the last good heel like Harley Race you've seen on that show? Again, it comes back to who signs the checks, you know? And so, yeah, I think John, but the other part is, I made this comparison earlier today to someone I was talking to about this. When George Scott took the book in Charlotte, George Becker didn't stay on the payroll. George, and I have no pick with George Becker. He treated me right as a talent. But it made good common sense that with him still there, that it was going to make an uncomfortable situation for Scott starting out. It was going to be an uncomfortable situation for Becker because obviously in that position you're going to make enemies, you're going to make friends, you're going to have supporters, you're going to have detractors. So it was, and it's like you know, a major league baseball team or football team firing their manager or their head coach and keeping him on the payroll as a you know, as a bench coach or as a position coach while the new guy comes in. It's going to create friction, whether whether they're brothers or the best of friends or don't even know one another. So I don't know how well this is going to fit, you know.
Now, what is the benefit? Obviously, the money's there, but with obviously the reputation of Vince McMahon and then, you know, he doesn't sleep, you never sleep sort of thing. Who would you say, just anybody out there as far as, and it obviously doesn't have to be for real for this job, but who is someone out there not named Jim Ross who's been so good at it for so long? Who would be a person personality-wise that you think, you know what, if they had the chance, they'd be perfect for that gig?
Well, you know what? I'm sorry you asked because I don't have a ready answer for you. I honestly don't. I, you know, there's probably a lot of guys that would be good in that position, but also probably a lot of those same guys aren't easily steered by their nose. You know, I've always thought Terry Funk belonged in a booker's position. You know, we don't have bookers anymore, but I couldn't see Terry flourishing with a table full of writers who have never taken a bump. Does Terry understand talent? Does he understand what it takes to make talent? Does he understand how to play to someone's strength? Sure, he does. But if the guy or the people or whoever above him that are in control have guidelines that he has to stay within, then it doesn't matter what Terry knows. You know, I mean, he can still know it, but it's of lesser value to the company and to the talent themselves. So that, you know, to me, it's about I've driven race cars, started driving race cars when I was 15 years old, and I understand how to work on a car. But of course, that's evolved in the computer age, and now you have to have a $10,000 analyzing machine to work on an automobile. Okay, when I take my car to the mechanic for some work, I don't go out and lean over his shoulder. I figure if I'm paying him $60 an hour plus parts, he better damn well know what he's doing. And yet in the wrestling business, that doesn't seem – you pay these people six healthy figures a year for their talent that you don't allow them to do. I mean, you know, I'll be honest with you. When I was hired – when I first signed on with WCW, WWF was talking. You know, they had made me an offer. The WCW offer was better. So then once WCW started to, you know, dropping everybody off because they were, you know, rupturing tens of thousands of dollars a day, I realized that I was, you know, I knew that I was going back, you know, I was going to be hired by WWE. It was just a matter of when. Now, why would they have hired me at all? Well, probably my guess would be because I had a good track record. They had used my talent in enhancement situations. They were good. They understood the locker room etiquette. They were professional, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so they hired me and then proceeded to try to adjust how I train people, which didn't make a lot of sense to me, and it still doesn't today. And, you know, if I'm hiring you for a specialty thing, then I'm going to give you a lot of rope. And if you're going to hang your, if you're going to get hung, you're going to hang yourself. I'm not going to reel you in, take what I've hired you to do away from you, and tell you how to do the job I just hired you to do. If I knew how to do it, why the hell am I not doing it myself? Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. Now, was this a weekly thing, or was this, how often did it happen? Were they, hey, Les, I mean, why aren't you, you know, how did, and this is tough, too, because we only got a couple minutes before Tim comes on, but how often was it that they needled you or questioned you?
Oh, it was, you know, and it wasn't always, it was never, seldom was it directly, honestly, seldom was it directly. Things would get back to me, you know, about the way I was utilizing somebody or what I was doing, or I was, you know, maybe you shouldn't do this, or maybe you shouldn't do that. The funny thing is, the one guy that was in talent relations at the time had been with a company like 9 years in their television department, and for some reason they saw fit to move into talent relations, and he didn't actually understand the business. In fact, he infuriated Corny so bad down at OVW one time, Corny almost threatened to throw him out of the building. But he would make ridiculous suggestions. But, I mean, it was, we had more leeway then. And I shouldn't say that we didn't have any leeway, but it was, you know, now it's even worse, and I've been told that by people on the, you know, on the inside, some that I had worked with, you know, during my tenure with the company. But it was a lot of times, you know, you get a phone call and say, well, you know, so and so thinks you should be doing this or doing that, and I don't know if it's just because I'm a hard-headed Irishman or I believe in what I do, and I honestly, Mike, if you hire, you know, if I take your money, no matter how much money that is, to do something for you, I'm going to try to be the best I can be at doing that, and you know, so that you're happy with what you paid for. And I had no reason to sabotage WWE in any respect. And yet, you know, there was always, well, you know, you made this statement. Somebody brought it to the so and so's attention. Okay, so what? You know, it's just, I mean, it's petty. It honestly is petty in a great way. But the one thing they did do that is done now, that way, or at least as I understand it, my TV, I formatted my TV. I booked my TV the way I wanted to book my TV, which I'm sure didn't always, you know, sit well with everybody up north. But now, as I understand it, those formats have to go to Stanford to be okayed before they could actually, you know, utilize them. And that is insane. That's just totally stupid.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
I wouldn't have been able to have survived in that atmosphere. I just wouldn't. I mean, I feel like a hired gun. Whoever I ever worked for in any promotion over the last 52 years, I've always tried to do the best job I know how. I take pride in my work, and you know, and yet I told somebody one time years ago when they said, "What are the things you don't like about this business?" I said, one is I hope I never have to wear a tuxedo on a television program because I hate the damn things. And it makes me think it's a Humphrey Bogart 1938 fight movie. And the second thing is I detest being hired for my creativity and not being allowed to create. So, you know, but that's the thing. I'm not here to tell you John Laurinaitis is a Saint John in any way, shape, or form. I never had any problems with John. I realize other people have, and I'm sure where there's smoke, there's fire. But you can't lay the blame for lack of talent on John. You can't lay it on Steamboat. You can't. Getting rid of Tommy Pritchard is not going to change that either if you are not going to allow DeMott and Steamboat and Kern and whoever the hell else is down there to do what they know how to do, you know. So it's just, you know, it's like me sitting here on the phone trying to tell Rich Tate, you know, how to produce his show. I'm not there.
Well, man. You know, somebody should. You know what? I'll take that before he jumps at me and yells at me angrily here to go to break anyway.
he's mimicking his idol, Vince McMahon. He knows Vince sits and screams obscenities into people's ears, and that's. I'm glad I don't hear that.
See, you look at him as Vince. I'm looking at him more just as Oz, and I'm just waiting for the house to fall on him.
Well,
here too, but
he's taller than Oz, I think. And younger.
When we get back from break, everybody, you're on Ringside Wrap. We're going to have on Tim Hornbaker. Again, we're talking about his new book, Legends of Pro Wrestling, 150 Years, Headlocks, Body Slams, Pile Drivers, and yes, even Les Thatcher is in this book. So we'll be right back after this.
Hey, this is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers for Rap. I'm here to remind you that drunk drivers are still a major killer of young adults in this country. So always choose a designated driver, and remember, music lives, you should too.
Getting blown in the state of Mississippi. Papa was a copper and a mama was a hippie.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Want to know one of the best ways to help kids do better in school? Hi, I'm Patty Austin. I visit a lot of schools both at home and when I'm on the road, and I hear too many students say, school's boring. And I say to them, what about music class? You know, learning music opens up the mind like nothing else. Performing in a school music ensemble is fun and challenging for kids. It encourages creativity while instilling self-discipline. And learning music even develops something called spatial IQ, which helps students tackle the challenges of other subjects like math and science. Some night this week, sit down as a family and play your kids some music you really love. Then listen to what your kids like and compare notes. Even better, sit down at the piano and sing some songs together. Help your kids learn to love music.
A PSA brought to you by MEMC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard, ride a bike, or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
And be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
At letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and I'm very happy to bring on our next guest, someone we've been wanting to talk to for quite some time, and been talking about it all night. His book, Legends of Pro Wrestling, 150 Years of Headlocks, Body Slams, and Pile Drivers, is out and available right now. Just go to ringsiderap.com to take a look at that. Mr. Tim Hornbaker, and Tim, how are you this evening?
I'm very good. Thank you very much for having me.
Tim, I'm going to start the ball rolling here and ask, where do I send the check and how much does it cost me to be in your book is what I need.
Well, I think your career spoke for itself, Les, and it was great to put you in there and feature you alongside everybody else.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. But the way Mike mentions it, you know, he's, and you're in there. Like, why?
I tell you what. I mean, this is a big departure in a way from the National Wrestling Alliance book that I'd like to talk to you about later on. And, I mean, you have everyone from Americas right down to Austin Aries in TNA in this book. Why did you decide on doing a project like this? And how did you decide to whittle down some of the people who were in there?
Well, that's a great question. I'll tell you, even before I came up with the NWA project idea and really went full steam ahead with that, I really wanted to do a reference-type book that anybody can pick up and flip to a page and pick up information on some of their top, you know, heroes and villains and some of the guys that they watched throughout their lives. And so basically I was focused on doing that before I did the NWA book. And after the NWA book, I didn't know if I was going to do another book on wrestling. And this opportunity presented itself, and I was like, wow, this is what I always wanted to do. I wanted to have a all-encompassing book featuring, like you said, guys going back to Americas and even back to, you know, the 1800s with Colonel McLaughlin and William Muldoon all the way through present day, just to kind of give readers and wrestling fans a thorough examination of the sport's history.
Now, did you look at books like the thing it reminded me of at first, and I'm not even comparing the two because what you've done is just amazing, but Roberta Morgan came out with a book in the late 70s, early 80s called The Main Event, and there were a couple other ones too that kind of did the same thing in a way, which was give a history of certain guys and bios and things like that. Did you look back at any books, or did you know what you had in mind and this is exactly what it was, or did you look back and see how some of the other reference books work?
I kind of might have been influenced on sports books from other genres, maybe baseball and football, but nothing in particular. I kind of had in mind what I wanted to do. I really had originally was going to be 400 wrestlers, and the publishing house actually shot for 500 in the book. And to me, it was very hard, and I believe the question you asked before about how did I kind of figure out who was going to be in the book, it was very a very tough chore to because there was a lot of names that I had to leave out because I didn't either have enough time to research, and we wanted to have photos for each guy in the book as well, so some of the people that I couldn't obtain photos for had to be left out. So it was definitely a difficult kind of a job to not only select the 500, but come up with their information, a thoroughly researched biography, and to kind of put it all together in the end and make it kind of respectable. You know, I know with my NWA book, really I put all of my heart and soul, my research into that book, and I had a personal standard that I wanted to live up to with another wrestling book. So this really was a tough job on all accounts.
When it came to some of those names, was there anybody when it got to the end and it did go to press where you looked at it with, you know, not so tired eyes and went, oh, God, I should have put that guy in there? Or was there somebody that somebody brought up to you that maybe you've forgotten about where you were kicking yourself a little bit? Or did you really, do you think you got everybody in there you really would have hoped to?
I think there's a couple names that I really wanted in the book that I couldn't. The first was Charles Olson, a major star from the 1900s and 1910s. And the reason why I couldn't get him into the book, and I had his biography all done, and I really looked high and low for a photo of him, and I couldn't find one. I mean, I looked everywhere possible. I asked a lot of my fellow researchers, collectors, and I really just couldn't locate a photo, and that was pretty much the defining reason why he's not in the book. And there are others. People have mentioned guys like Dutch Savage and even Kamala, who's in the news lately. You know, some of these guys who, maybe should have been in the book, but at the last, you know, at the late time that I had, and just general, you know, the clock dwindling down, I pretty much just couldn't squeeze them in. And I think I knew when I was doing the book that with the 500 names that I was alone choosing, that it was going to be debatable and people were going to say that either this guy didn't belong in or this guy did belong in. So I kind of knew that going in and kind of just did the best I could.
Let me ask you a question, Tim. I own the NWA book, and I probably will own this one as well. In fact, the funny thing about the NWA book is as I read it, there were times that I thought, Jesus, I was in that territory, and I didn't know that was going on at the time.
Yeah.
But Where did your obsession with professional wrestling begin? As a young boy or what?
Absolutely. I mean, I began as a fan like everyone else, really, and just watching it on TV. And I think I just had a yearning to learn more. And I would pick up magazines and books and see that there were some holes in history. And professional wrestling history, as you guys know, is very difficult to research and even understand it sometimes because the mysterious nature of the sport and the secrecy. So I think those kind of factors really motivated me to continue my search, and especially when I had read, you know, as many magazines as I could and picked up all the books that I could and realized that there was a dropping point, and now if I wanted to know more, I really had to do it myself. So I think with building a general database of information, and then once I decided on the NWA book at the time and put all my energy into it, it really kind of, you know, everything kind of fell into place, and I was really lucky and fortunate to be able to write that book.
The NWA book is a must own, and you know, it's a must own book. How did that begin as far as, I mean, did you start digging for certain files and then more appeared, or how did that all come to pass? Because, you know, you can have three, you know, professional wrestlers in a room seeing the same exact thing, and when you ask them about it later what happened, you'll get three different stories. How were you able to sift through the stories and match them up to the documents, and how much time did you put in on that tome? Because it is, again, it is a must-own for anybody with even the slightest bit of interest in the workings of professional wrestling history.
Well, I really appreciate the compliments. I think you know, you hit it on the head. I mean, it was a very difficult thing. Everybody, you know, you talk to three wrestlers and they all give you different stories. Promoters were hiding facts about what happened. And another difficult thing at the time when I was writing it, you know, most of the people that were involved in the glory days of the NWA or the beginnings of the NWA had passed away. So I was really stuck, really, you know, trying to look under every rock possible, trying to locate information. You know, going on the information that I had researched for years before starting the book, and then once I really started going, it really took a couple years to kind of get it to the point where I felt it was ready for publication. I think finding the Department of Justice records really gave me some insight into the beginnings of the NWA. But there were a lot of documents and interviews and stuff that I really wish that I could have obtained, and I think if I would have, I think the book could have actually been improved. But I think basically with what I had and what I was able to locate and the interviews that I did, I really had a good understanding of the people behind the organization and was able to put it together into a book.
Well, you've been amending the book in a way online with some updates. Is that going to be something you're going to continue to do, or did you have any interest in possibly doing a second part of this book with more things that have come out later as you acquire interviews?
You know, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, I actually at one time I thought a rewrite of the NWA book and then maybe an update would be a fascinating study. I just don't know if people would be interested in it or if I really – because to this point I've obtained some information and I've gotten some new pieces of data that people might be interested in, but not really the breakthrough information that I think people would really flip out over. Still, a lot of the documents, I think, from – the latter part of the 50s and 60s and 70s, I have not even seen. So unless I was able to get my hands on, you know, more of the NWA meeting minutes and maybe the NWA documents and stuff like that, I don't even think I can do it. But, you know, I don't even know if the documents are still in existence, to tell you the truth. But if I was able to get a hold of that, I would certainly take a look at that opportunity.
You know, Les's job in Vegas every year is to shred all of those documents before everybody left town.
Yeah, sure. Where do you live, Tim? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in South Florida,
okay.
The Fort Lauderdale area.
All right, so you're a Florida Championship Wrestling fan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Cool. Well, then you got a good education in terms of classic professional wrestling. There's no doubt about it.
Definitely.
Yeah. Do you still live there, or?
Yeah, I'm still here in the suburbs of Lauderdale, and, you know, I was actually born in Chicago, but I didn't live there long enough to really enjoy it, and I'd like to maybe one day travel more, but as far as I am, I'm set down here right now.
So now, when you got ready to do the NWA book, did you go back? Have you ever seen Fall Guys, the book Fall Guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That was the first expose I ever saw, and that was back, in the late 60s, and I was shocked as a young wrestler.
That book is an eye-opener, definitely.
Yeah, amazing. And to think that it was written back in the 30s, and yet, all my growing up, I never heard anything about it, and until, like I say, the late 60s, and that was the old photographer Gene Gordon in Charlotte had bought the thing on a sidewalk sale at one of the major department stores in downtown Charlotte. I think he paid $2 for it or some silliness like that. And when he passed it around for us to read, I thought, oh, my God. And I was amazed that it never made more shockwaves to the general public than it actually, you know, because so I don't even think a lot of the wrestlers even knew that that thing existed.
Yeah, I mean, Fall Guys is definitely one of the first, if not the first book, to really break down that curtain to look back at the, you know, the shenanigans of the promoters and just all the craziness that happened, especially in the 1930s. But I learned a lot from that book as well.
Yeah. Mike, have you read that book?
I actually printed it off. It's available somewhere online, and I can't remember exactly, maybe on the Wrestling As We Like It page, where you can actually see the thing. And the fact of when it was written, it will absolutely blow your mind. The Barnums of Bounce.
Yep, absolutely.
Timmy, sports publishing sounds like they have been crazy supportive of you know, you doing this book and obviously wanting it to be 500 wrestlers, and you talked about maybe, you know, you weren't sure if you were going to do another book on wrestling. What were you thinking about doing, and what's your bag outside of wrestling?
Actually, I'm right now pretty much just researching and writing. I do a little bit of fiction and nonfiction writing, of course. And sports publishing has been unbelievably supportive from the beginning. I actually had made contact with an employee there a couple years ago talking about a wrestling book, and it kind of fell by the wayside at the time, and we really hadn't talked about it. And after my book on the NWA, I really didn't think I was going to do another book on professional wrestling. And I thought, you know, it would really take something special to get me back and motivated and enthusiastic to really research to the point where, you know, I felt comfortable with putting a book out there again. So with finally when I got in touch with Sports Publishing again, this was early last year, we kind of went back and forth for about a month on concepts and what we saw in a wrestling book, and finally agreed on the 500 wrestler, 500 photo, this mammoth idea, which again at the time I was kind of blown away and didn't know if I could even do it. And it was pretty much just a year of research and working with photographers and trying to make sure I got all the pieces of the puzzle. And, you know, with me personally, I really take pride in my research and going the extra mile, trying to find all the odds and ends and making sure that I don't put any inaccuracies in the book. So with all that, you know, I had a kind of a year of just being in my office working, and trying to put together a book I hoped, you know, wrestling fans of all ages would really appreciate.
Now, if you showed that book to me or Mike Mooneyham or somebody like that, we would probably know every name in the book. But was there anybody where, like, say to somebody like Ricky Starr, who probably a lot of people wouldn't know and wouldn't know his gimmick if they'd never heard Terry Funk or Gary Hart talk about him because he was so big in Texas, and even though he was on the dawning of the TV age, he's kind of been forgotten about with lots of other names from that era. Was there anybody where even they were like, well, who is this guy? Or they wondered why they were in there?
Are you talking about the publishing house itself?
Or the publishing house, or really anybody maybe you showed the book to, maybe more casual fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think I even had, you know, a friend look at it and wonder why I was putting people like Cody Rhodes and stuff in the book. And, you know, the reason why I think, you know, for some of these younger wrestlers that maybe haven't defined themselves as legends as of yet, I think I kind of wanted to give younger readers some maybe motivation to open the book and examine it and maybe open the door for their further reading of guys like Ricky Starr, or, you know, going back to, you know, the Muldoons and the Bull Currys and, you know, the Funks, and kind of open the door to the bigger scope of professional wrestling. But there was even a couple guys, you know, Bobby Stewart was one of the guys who I even, you know, he was the Golden Terror, and he was a guy who I always had been fascinated with, and a guy who I couldn't really locate a lot of information on because his career had been very mysterious. He went by a couple different real names, and nobody knew when he was born or when he died. I mean, he was just one of the most mysterious wrestlers that I had ever encountered. And that's, you know, and this was not even with his mask. I mean, the guy was just, you know, tough to research. And finally, I had gotten a couple leads on him, and he wasn't the greatest wrestler of all time. I mean, he was a kind of a brawler and one of these guys who, you know, held the world title for a brief time in the late 1930s. But I thought that, you know, he had such an interesting career and, you know, for that period of time really was a special athlete. So I felt personally that I really wanted to research him and include him in the book. And with a really good lead and found out that he had spent some time in jail, and this was long after his career had ended, that I was able to kind of piece together his career and get him in the book and allow people to read and learn about him.
You know, it's a shame that, you know, the history of wrestling, is, like you say, has been so mysterious itself. And I really wish that books like yours, and the NWA thing, for that matter, both your books, that a lot of the young guys that I tend to work with in seminars and training camps have no idea about the history of the business that they're in. And to me, that was one of the things that at age 19, when I started to train, you know, I could go back and talk about guys and this and that, because I wanted to know. There was a thirst for that knowledge, and it just doesn't seem to be that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I've read about a lot of wrestlers, and, you know, you kind of, while researching, you read about a wrestler's story, and, you know, yeah, some of the guys were wrestling fans, and they had their favorites and were really lured into the sport. And like you said, today's these up-and-coming wrestlers and even fans, you know, you watch the WWE and you look out at the crowd on TV and you wonder that, do any of these people care about guys like Ricky Starr, Bobby Stewart, or Jim Lowndes, or any of these guys who really paved the way for wrestling as it is? And if not, it's kind of upsetting that the legacy of wrestling is not, and the tradition of wrestling is really not appreciated, much like other sports that, the traditions of baseball or football and the days of yore and stuff that really you don't get that in wrestling. And I don't know why that is, but it definitely is that way.
Yeah, and it's such a colorful history. And to me, even, you know, what little being a part of some of it, of course, but it's a shame because I think they should know who came before them, who opened the doors for them. The crazy thing, you know, like you're saying, they don't seem to be interested in history and don't look much past yesterday. I was talking to a promoter today, and he was saying about, we were talking about seminars and training camps, and he was mentioning, he said, he brought up Fit Finley's name, and, you know, and I said, yeah, Fit's a hell of a trainer and very good at his craft. And he said, you know, the shame of it is guys like Fit, and he said, and going back to you or some of these other guys, these kids don't have a clue. He said he was at some place where Fit had done a seminar. It was like six or seven kids showing up. And you know, the sad thing is that every independent kid within walking distance of where he was having a seminar should have spent whatever it took to go there, because they would have walked away with far more knowledge and in-depth information about the business. And yet, you know, there were people who didn't know. I was in at OVW a couple weeks ago for their advanced class on Sunday. Rip Rogers ran, and after they got done with the physical thing in the ring, he pulled out some tapes, and we were looking at, and they showed the Buddy Rogers Pat O'Connor thing, and there were so many of those kids that just, who the hell's Pat O'Connor, Buddy Rogers? And the tape he was showing was Comiskey Park 1961, where Rogers won the strap from Pat, and that's something I'd use for, you know, as a training tool as well. But these kids just don't know, and there's, I think, so much to be learned from the, well, like that particular match. I think it holds up in terms of psychology and facials and body language and timing and the whole nine yards, because those were two great workers. But yet they didn't do moonsaults, and they, you know, and they didn't do 47 Muay Thai kicks, so nobody paid attention.
Yeah, that's a sad commentary on wrestling. I think of, if I was anywhere in the same general area as a guy like Fit Finley and I wanted to be a professional wrestler, I mean, I would have been listening to his every word. I would have been asking him questions. I would have been really interested in learning the deeper aspects of professional wrestling. And like you said, if it's not this high-flying moonsaults and this outrageousness that's going on when you watch wrestling today, maybe a lot of these younger guys just, you know, they don't get it. You know, they don't get the deeper aspects of it. It's not about, you know, only, you know, putting your body on the line and almost breaking your neck in every match. It's about the deeper aspects of it. And yeah, like you said, the grimaces and just the whole, you know, the backstory of the match and being able to talk and kind of, you know, like Buddy Rogers would be able to, you know, walk to the ring and scowl at the audience and talk to his opponent and kind of build a match up, and you really feel like you're a part of it. And I think there's a disconnect now with a lot of these younger wrestlers who go out there and think by being as flashy as humanly possible that is making them a legend. And unfortunately, a lot of these guys are getting hurt, and they're not understanding the deeper side of professional wrestling. And for me as a fan, you know, and I was a fan first, and I'm still a fan, I look for, you know, the positive aspects of professional wrestling today, and to kind of see and witness, be a witness to this evolution of the sport. It's really disturbing to me, and I really wish that, you know, we'd kind of get a flashback to another era, but I don't really see it happening, unfortunately.
Yeah, I'm with you, and it's sad that it won't happen. Who were some of the guys that you idolized as a young man?
That's a great question. I mean, I think, of course, Ricky Steamboat, a lot of these guys like this, Randy Savage, Ted DiBiase, Terry Funk, guys who, you know, like we just said, who had a multi-dimensional kind of way about them, you know. And of course, as I learned about professional wrestling and began to research and even watch videos, I mean, it's hard not to be impressed with Lou Thesz and Danny Hodge, and, you know, going back generations as far as possible. You know, of course, these guys are some of the people that I would, you know, admit to now, even though I didn't grow up in those eras, to saying that these guys are, you know, heroes of mine in the professional wrestling business, or people who I admire And as pioneers, you know, you go back to Earl Caddick and Joe Stecker and Ed Stringer Lewis, you know, these guys really paved the way to, you know, giving the, passing the torch to a Lou Thesz and bringing the entire business forward and making it a worldwide phenomenon. So I think as a fan, I had, you know, the certain guys that I liked to see when I was young. And then as a researcher, of course, I began to learn about, you know, the backstories and the real legends of the business.
Like Les Thatcher, I hope you're going to say that.
No. I can't afford to send him too big a check, Mike. Cool.
I was going to say, because he got your birthday wrong here. Just remember, Tim, for the next edition, the revised one, because born 1960. Actually, he began wrestling as an infant. That's
okay, yeah. I didn't...
Well, Tim, you know, I got to ask you this. I don't want to take up too much of your night here, but, you know, I'm not, you know, you sound like you're from my kind of generation. I'm 36 years old. Brian Alvarez is 37. A lot of the guys who I know that I see at UFC shows and work in the media, we're all around the same age. And we're all the kinds that read your book and read Chokehold and books like that. We're kind of like that last generation because we had a chance to go through the rise of the 80s and out, and then we had a chance to go through the Attitude Era and the Nitro Era, which picked everything up and you know, have the massive technology and being able to see Japan and things from around the world. Is it possible, because you talked before about, you know, it's disappointing what you see sometimes when it comes to fans and the product. Is there a way to keep things going, and are we going to be able to keep things going and keep history alive? I mean, when it comes to these books and everything else, it just seems to be, if it dies with this era and us not kind of pushing it out there, do you think it could just die for good?
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think that the WWE history will be the one that people are most influenced by, and so I think it's up to people like you and a lot of others, you know, researchers and anybody who really cares about the history of the sport to really do their duty to kind of keep it alive and go for, try to push for more books and talk about it as much as humanly possible. And maybe, you know, one by one we can attract more and more people into learning about the history of professional wrestling and the guys who really, you know, the pioneers and stuff. And other than that, if we don't fight for it, we're going to lose it to the WWE's version of history. And at that point, God knows where it's going to end up, honestly.
Tim, are there any books, because we on the ringsiderap.com site, Rich Tate, myself and Les all have, you know, we did this list, it's probably been about a year or so, we have 12 books up there. Are there any wrestling books that stand out to you that are must-reads or that you have any opinions about? Because Chokehold, if you look at it, and you have to look at it obviously through the prism of Jim Wilson and his story and what he thought and believed, when you sift through that, because of the work he did in the lawsuits that he filed, there's a lot of money information in there. Are there any books like that that pop out to you as you know, good companions to both the NWA book and the new one?
That's a great question. I did like Chokehold. I think that was a very informative book and kind of really opened my eyes to the beginnings of the NWA and was very influential when I was just starting that book out. I also enjoyed, you know, the biography on Lou Thesz, Hooker. There's been a bunch of books that are really thoroughly researched by some great, you know, historians. Mark Hewitt has put out a couple really good books on wrestling history. I know Greg Oliver and Steve Johnson, you know, they do a lot of really great work. So, and of course, Scott Teal is the man. I mean, with his innumerable biographies, he just does a lot of great work. So I think if a fan or a reader is interested in learning about wrestling history, there is a pretty good selection to start from and to kind of build upon what a lot of this current generation has researched. And hopefully there will be people coming up after us who will take what we have done and maybe go a step further and build upon what, you know, the study of professional wrestling. And, you know, in 30, 50 years from now, not let the WWE or another outside force kind of dictate what professional wrestling history has been and who the top names are. I would really be upset if, you know, guys like Frank Gotch and Lou Thesz were hidden in the history of wrestling and kind of disregarded for Triple H and John Cena, you know. So I think there's a job of anybody interested in preserving professional wrestling history to kind of fight for, to preserve the sport and to kind of be, you know, tell the history in an honest way and to give it to the next generation or give it to fans of all ages, and hopefully it will be embraced and built upon going into the future.
Are you considering another wrestling book at any point in time?
That's a great question. I actually had explained to one of my friends that I would consider doing a book on the AWA in the in the same sort of style as the NWA book. But other than that, I mean, I haven't started that idea, and it would really take a lot for me to get motivated about that. As of today, I don't have any ideas as far as another wrestling book. I might do another sports book, but nothing is definite as of this point.
Well, Tim, no matter what, if you write another one or not, I'd love to have you back on the show at some time. And hopefully it's after the checks from Les Thatcher clears here, because I'd like to read this, because we talk about how things can be revisionist history later, and there's a lot of people that don't want to hear this, but I believe it's the truth. So I'm going to quote a little bit of this book here. As it says that, quote, many superstars have a wealth of knowledge today because of the lessons they learned from Thatcher, and his contributions to the sport will continue to be seen for many years to come.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's pretty heavy, guys. I mean, I'm humbled by that, Tim, and I hope I can live up to it.
Well, it's my pleasure. I mean, from everything I've learned from you and other guys, I mean, I think you've been nothing but a credit to professional wrestling, and I think that, you know, we've all learned a little something from you, and it's just an honor to be with you guys tonight.
Well, thank you very much, and continued success to you, and like Mike says, we'd love to have you back again.
Well, thank you very much. I sincerely appreciate it.
All right. Hey, Tim, you know, before you go to any Twitter, Facebook, all that sort of stuff, go ahead and give it a plug.
All right. Well, yeah, people can search me I'm on Facebook. You can just type in Tim Hornbaker, or I've got a book page, Legends of Pro Wrestling, and my website is www.legacyofwrestling.com. And, yeah, you can pick up the book at your favorite bookstore or go to Amazon. And if you have any questions, just, you know, contact me on Facebook or my website.
Tim, thank you so very much. And again, everybody, Legends of Pro Wrestling, 150 years of headlocks, body slams, and pile drivers. The foreword of this book's by Jimmy Superfly Snuka, too, on top of it. Didn't even mention that. But Tim Hornbaker, again, thank you so much for coming on. And we'll be right back after this on Ringside Wrap.
Kicksburg.
I'm Ronnie Dunn.
And we're Brooke.
And Dunn for Rad. And I've got a four-letter word for you. Don't. As in don't drive drunk.
And I got a three-letter word for you as in get. Get the keys.
When you see someone who's about to drive under the influence,
get the keys.
Because friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Are ye plagued by foreclosure? Well, here at Jim, Lad, and Matey, we can stop your foreclosure now. We're a mortgage rescue company, and for the small fee of everything you hold dear, we will negotiate with your lender on your behalf. Call Jim, Lad, and Matey at 1-800-YAR-YAR. That's 1-800-YAR-YAR-YAR.
If you're facing foreclosure, talk to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters. For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap. Les Thatcher along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and I want to thank Kerry Peterman as well as all of our sponsors, and also thank Tim Hornbaker for coming on. And again, find out about his book in a number of ways, at the very least of which, go to ringsidewrap.com, which you should be anyway. And hey, Les, that's got to be, again, feel pretty good, and I'm very thankful to Tim. I know I slobber all over all of our literary guests that we have on, like Greg Klein and Jonathan Snowden and Tim Hornbaker. But, you know, if it wasn't for those guys and Mike Mooneyham, you know, or Fourth Beetle here that comes on with us and guys like that, it's hard to keep it going. And many are going to be influenced by what you've done, not only teaching what you've done in the ring, but also doing shows like this on a regular basis and getting the word out there, whether people want to hear it or not. And, it is much appreciated.
Well, you know, obviously we all work at this business for monetary reward. I mean, are we work at any job for monetary reward? But 52 years is, for me, it's been my passion, my love. It's who I am. It's what I do. But, you know, it's the gratification is to know that, you know, that you've left something, you know, that's meaningful. You know, and when you hear things like that, I'm not really sure how to answer them. Because I mean, as cocky and as you know, sarcastic as I may seem at times, it's just, I mean, really, when it comes down, especially when you're basically being, given accolades by someone, you know, like that, or from within the industry, and so yeah, it's gratifying. It certainly is. It's, you know, it's like watching somebody you've worked with in terms of, as you know, training. It's Well, like we had Adam Cole on, you know, and having been able to work with Adam. I got to, did you get to, speaking of Adam Cole, did you get to see the, well, you saw the match live. Hell, I'm not, I'm asking you, you saw it on television.
But looked damn good on TV, too.
Yeah, yeah, I came across, it was a couple little things. I sent him an email and got picky with a couple things, but... you know, the whole thing, which had nothing to do with Adam, but I thought, okay, here, you know, to me, part of making a title match meaningful is to for the wrestlers themselves. And I just thought that when Roddy threw him out and they started the thing on the floor, I said, oh, Christ, where do we go from here? You know, it was just, I just didn't see. That show, while we're on Ring of Honor, I guess we might as well talk about it a little bit. The first two segments of that show were the weakest I have seen since I've been able to watch it. The kid with the cowboy hat and the funny mask and Mike Seidel should find something to do for a living outside of wrestling. I'm sorry. It's just I just thought those first two matches on that. I don't know. Did you know where one show ended and the other one began? I mean, sometimes in terms of watching four shows put together live, you really don't know.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's tough. And one of the things for me is I brought my son, and you know, always have to quiver a little bit when Kevin Steen grabs the microphone. But I brought my son, which it does. And so I'm not using him as a distraction, but you know, with trying to keep him going in the whole nine yards, it does go on for a while, and they do, you know, it's a clear break, and they do give everybody a chance to kind of shake their legs in the whole nine yards, but I'll say this, I wish they'd cut it to three, because I think if you get them to go more nuts for three, it doesn't go on for so long, but then again, I'm not in their pocket, so, you know, what they're doing is, I'm sure, what's best for them financially.
Yeah, yeah, well, the what I was talking about is, I can't think of ever the guy's name, and I meant to, because he looked silly with the costuming, but he was against excuse me, Rhino, and did just a pretty much a bang up job for Rhino. I mean, Rhino just beat the hell out of him.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then this then Mike you know, Seidel, who supposedly is Matt's brother, whether he is or not I don't know, was just acting. I mean, I thought he was on peyote or something, for Christ's sake.
Was he trying to do a Brian Pillman meets Brian Kendrick when he was skipping through WWE type thing? I don't know what that was exactly.
I have no earthly idea what he was trying to do. But then, you know, and he was all, had musical notes tattooed on his nose and one damn thing and another. And then, of course, Steen had I'd like to see Jimmy Jacobs, the wrestler. I've seen, you know, Jimmy Jacobs in 37 different personas. And there was Jimmy Jacobs, but with all the way the silly costuming and then of course Truth, you know, Martini. I like Martini. I hate the costuming. If I'm selling you as a legitimate life coach or whatever the hell you want to call it, I would have had, you know, dressing like, I'm not sure, 17th century Duke of Windsor or something. But anyway. Those first two, first couple segments, I thought, Jesus, it's Halloween, you know. But it was just so indie, had that indie look, and I thought, wow, you know, somebody there was a little snafu of putting all that back to back to back. You know, there's something with more substance and more solid, I think, should have been involved there. But anyway, it's just that was honestly. It was the weakest opening I've seen on that show, I think, since I've been able to watch it on television.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I'm surprised. And it's hard because of when they taped it to now. I actually thought that this, and I guess it is the last week going in, but I thought this the Cole thing was actually going to be on this coming week's show. I didn't know it was going to happen on last week's. But, they didn't make any bones about letting that news out anyway. And we talked a little bit about last week, you know, the pay-per-view that's coming up for them with Kevin Steen and, Bray Lockin right now, Eddie Kingston, being one of Cornette's, basically a hired gun, a guy to go in there and bang around with Kevin Steen. Actually, I got a question for you. Just because you brought up Jimmy Jacobs, here's something I'm not quite sure I understand is I'm just throwing this out there, actually open to anyone. Is there something wrong with Jimmy Jacobs? Because from what I remember, he was a perfectly serviceable pro wrestler who a lot of people love to hate.
Well, the first time I saw him, First time I saw him, he was doing, they said it wasn't a takeoff on Brody, but it certainly was. The fur boots and the husk.
Oh, the husk, the berserker thing, John Norris.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And I, which, excuse me, Jimmy seems like a real nice kid. But having, not knowing him, and I first saw the gimmick, I was turned off immediately because I just thought it was a bad parody, and I wasn't interested in the least. But then he's done several different gimmicks, but there's always, it's always been something bizarre, you know? And I was just thinking about that the other day when I was watching this. I thought, has there ever been a Jimmy Jacobs the Wrestler, right, who doesn't have dyed hair, who doesn't wear makeup, who wears a pair of
actual... with Lacey, yes.
Yeah, who actually just comes out and becomes a wrestler. It's just, you know, I'd be curious. But, I'm down in North Carolina. I'm just getting computerized here, and I'm not like I'm out in the wilderness or anything. I've been spending time with my grandchildren and, family and stuff. So I've watched wrestling and stuff, but I'm not immersed in it like I normally would be. But the whole thing with the Davey Richards shoot interview, which denounces Cornette as being, out of touch, and then the Richards and Tony Kazina thing and Kyle O'Reilly that happened up in Iowa, you must be on top of that a little better than I am. I've had several people approach me with that. I've never seen that side of Tony or Davey, quite frankly.
When I saw the first thing somebody sent me was Kozina, and this is without context, was Kozina, all of them, Kozina and a 16-year-old kid, and I'm thinking to myself when it was over, I'm not sure where Kozina was wrong, and this is without context at that time, where I'm not seeing where this is a 16-year-old kid who is playing wrestling. He kind of could have hurt him a lot worse, and he didn't really hurt him at all. He just choked him out at the end there, which I'm not saying that doesn't hurt you, but, I mean, he could have killed him with one of those pile drivers or something, but I didn't have a problem with it. But then the more of the story comes out, and... You know, because he's been around a long time. It seems to certainly be somewhat out of character from him, from what people say. Davey Richards, I don't know what his deal is, but Kyle O'Reilly has just started wrestling. Whether right or wrong, is that something, even though it's a different era in wrestling, that can something really be hung on Kyle O'Reilly for that? And because I'm a little baffled by the whole thing, too, because again, it sounds like both sides were wrong, but I don't see how you take somebody's money and then take off and run and then make jokes about it later.
I don't either. Well, with Kyle, all 4 years that we ran training camps at CAC, Tony was there. The first year he came all the way from Portland, and then I worked with Tony and Davey at a high spot. I did a 2-day camp with High Spots a number of years ago. In fact, it was it was just a couple months after Davey had won the Super 8. I worked with him there. I've only met Kyle. I really don't know. He was, when I was introduced to Kyle, he was at an ROH show in Dayton, actually just starting to train at the time. So I can't, but I'm sure that, you know, the whole guilt by association thing works in our business as well as it does anywhere else, which is a shame. But like you're talking about Tony, I've never, he was such a quiet, respectful guy. I've never seen that. I've never seen that side of Davey, although I could, you know, be more attuned to Davey coming across that way than I could Tony. But the things that, you know, that kind of were disturbing to me, if they were said, was that the seminar he did is he told these kids, well, you should work go ahead and work the first 2 years for nothing. Guys, if you're working for nothing, call me, okay? I'm going to start a promotion all over again. No, seriously, if you're training in OVW, that's your training ground. You work their shows. That's part of your learning, or whether you're on, with WLW with Harley or whoever. You know, that's part of the game. But just to go out and work for anybody and everybody for a couple years for NO, no, that's crazy. And the other thing to hear Davey say, which seems so out of context for a guy who's so intense, to say, I don't work hard on these small shows. That is entirely out of line. It really is. To say that, you know, I'm doing a camp this weekend here in North Carolina, and then Canada next month, and Georgia the following month, which we'll cover here later. But that's the last thing you tell these kids. But here is my answer to that. I was talking to somebody about that who brought it to my attention. I just read a little blurb about it. I said, here's the deal. Do I want you to go out and do superplexes and goofy bumps in front of 25 or 50 people? No, I do not. But if you actually know how to work, and the emphasis here is on the word work, you can go out and entertain those 25 people without breaking your back or permanently injuring yourself. If all you're worried about is getting your stuff in and getting in 57 spots or something, then, yeah, I probably wouldn't, you know, I'd say back off a little bit. But if you actually know how to work a classic wrestling style, you go out and you entertain those people. Years ago, I remember John Ringley, who was married to Francis Crockett, was part of the Crockett office for many years. I remember hearing him say to a young man, he said, it's not hard to go out in front of 5,000 people and get your adrenaline up and have them, you know, with them screaming and everything, going out there and working your ass off. He said, but it's more important that you go out there and work your ass off in front of 200 people, hoping that they'll bring another 100 with them when they come back the next show. And therein lies the story. If you want, your crowds to come up, you've got to give them a reason to go tell somebody that they missed something. And, you know, so that just it's misguided. And for him to say that, it seems so out of context, too, because I know just a few weeks ago, Kazine and I were emailing. They're starting, which you probably already knew, they're starting a school in St. Louis. And that just doesn't seem the right mindset to present the kids. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I don't know. As far as you got it. Well, somebody said to me, too, and I don't know all the details. They said, what's a 16-year-old kid from California doing working an indie show in Iowa?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to compare this to Mass Transit and the New Jack thing in ECW. That's completely different. But the fact that I talked about this with Dave Meltzer a couple weeks ago when I filled in for Brian Alvarez when he was away chasing Bigfoot. But we were talking about Terry Gordy because it was the anniversary of his death. And he is a freak of nature phenomenon that just seemed to be genetically engineered to be a pro wrestler. He started at 15 under a hood. By 19, he was a main event, and a much in demand, young star. Katsuhiko Nakajima, who is the adopted son of Kensuke Sasaki and Akira Hokuto, names that probably most of the people listening won't know, but they're huge names when it comes to Japan. Hokuto is arguably one of the greatest wrestlers of all time of any gender. If you're a fan of women's Japanese wrestling, you'd think that. He started off at 15. Okay, they're freaks. And frankly, I mean, Nakajima broke Chris Daniels' arm. And again, it's things that 15-year-olds do because they're not even into their bodies, for God's sakes. But why is a 16-year-old? I mean, I'm sorry. I completely, that's logic on me that's lost and shouldn't even, I don't think even be legal.
Yeah, no, that's, well, you know, Harley started when I was 19. Harley was 16.
Regal, there are guys like that.
Yeah, Regal was 15 or 16. Regal and I talked about working the carnivals and the fairs, one time years ago about that. And I said, I was a scared 19-year-old kid. He said, I was a scared 15-year-old kid. It was just, there was a 4-year. But part of that, too, is about mental maturity, never mind physical maturity. There was like some idiot, I wish I could say it nicer than that, but I won't. up in Ohio a number of years ago that was supposedly training 10 and 12 year olds. I said, that's first of all, this was back when everybody and their mother wasn't necessarily smart, and and you're smartening these kids up. But B, can they grasp the psychology at that age? I don't think so. And they're obviously physically not, mature either. There's no doubt in as many years and as well as I know Harley that at 15 or 16, Harley was probably mentally as old as some people, 25, for God's sakes. And I knew Gordy. He used to like to ride with me some when I was running the tours for WCW. Terry and I got nice guy. I mean, and as goofy as he acted, and as as much as he had his demons and stuff, he was not as he was a good guy, and had a strong, healthy respect for the business. But yeah, the 16-year-old, and again, you don't know the whole story. But that just seems so out of character for Tony Kazina, because he is such a mellow, sincere guy. I don't know. I just but the walking out with the money, that's bad. There's no way to justify that, even with the biggest. If the promoter were the biggest jackass in the entire universe, you don't take that out on the audience. You don't take that out on the boys in the back. That's on him, not on them. You don't work for him again, and if someone else says, hey, you've worked for so-and-so, what do you think? You say, absolutely not, I wouldn't go across the street for him again. That's fine. You hurt him that way. But the people, but the just walking out with the money, that's just bad business, period, end of story.
It's Davey Richards, and I don't know Davey Richards, so I'm not going to talk about him that way, but the New Japan situation, I guess Dave Meltzer has talked about Noah's situation, that he was going to go over there, whether he's had a conversation or not with Jim Cornette yet, I don't know. I'm sure Cornette wanted to have one with him about it, whether it's happened or not, who knows. But, if you are done with this and you're that burnt mentally where you said those things, and then just go off and be happy doing whatever it is that you want to do, not good. But
the whole thing about the work ethic thing, I'm not shocked, after so many years, Mike, nothing shocks me or amazes me in the business necessarily. But curious as to why he came up with that, not working hard. Because I know he and I had this particular conversation a number of years ago at an ROH show. In fact, this was when Tyler Black was their champion, and Davey was working with him that particular night. This was before their match earlier in the evening, and he and I were just talking in general, about this, that, and the other thing. And we were talking about training and not just wrestling training necessarily, but weight training and conditioning and so forth. And he said, "You probably think I'm crazy." He said, "But I train with at MMA gym." Because I want to be in the best shape I can to be able to produce the best product I can. And I said, I absolutely don't think you're crazy. I said, I admire and respect that because, I'm about doing the best job I know how to do and whatever it is I'm doing too. So for him to turn around and say, well, you don't work hard on these shows just doesn't seem to fit, The thing with Cornette to say Jimmy is out of touch. I was Lance Storm did a show with Vic and I a few weeks ago, and I know Lance brought that up when they were talking about him and Brian were talking about this. I caught just a bit of it last week. I didn't get to hear the whole thing, and Lance said that when he and I did the show, somebody had wondered if I because I'm 71 years old that I'm out of touch, and Lance says hardly. And that's what I'm going to say about Jimmy Cornette. Were you crazy? Here's the other thing. Let's break this down. I don't know if it's scientific or not, but let's break it down. Jim Cornette works for Sinclair. They pay the bills. No matter what, Jim, this is not OVW. This is not Smoky Mountain. This is ROH. So maybe they have, I mean, when I say maybe they have input, they obviously, if they write the checks, they have input. What is that input? I have no clue. There is also another guy behind the scenes who has input. Delirious is part of the, now I've heard that he, you know, he's got a good head on his shoulder. I've never seen any book. I don't know. So I'm not approaching that. But here's the other thing too. Jimmy Cornette can lay out the right story. He can lay out the right angle, the right way to get heat, the right way to take this to the next level. But it's the guys in the ring that have to act it out. And if they don't lay it out in there the way he envisions it in his mind, then you're right, it's not going to work. But you can't lay that at his feet. You know, it's just like the baseball, the manager of the Yankees can't play the game. He can be the most brilliant human being in the world, but if the guys don't take his intelligence and expertise in the game on the field with him, then it doesn't matter how smart he is. You know, it goes back to the John Laurinaitis thing again, right? It's a good finish, man, but when was the last time, you know, or so-and-so's a good finish, man. When was the last time you saw that kind of finish? So those guys, you know, it's always easy to lay the blame at somebody else's feet, obviously. And, of course, with, you know, but you and I have talked about this before. There's no CM Punk there. There's no Joe. There's no Nigel. There's no Dragon. Jamie Noble. I mean, you know, a lot, you know, Chris Daniels, Styles. These guys aren't those guys. Whether they, you know, it's not how they perceive themselves. It's how the public perceives them. And so if you can, you know, you could, Mike Sempervisi can have the greatest mind for whatever in the world, but if you can't physically execute it, then somebody else has to, and if they don't do it exactly the right way, then you're at fault, you know? So, no, you to say Jimmy Cornette's out of touch is bullshit. I don't know how to say it any nicer than that. I'm talking softly because my granddaughter might hear me. But I have to be careful. I have to be kind of closer to a little PG than I normally might be. But anyway, you know. But you know, you get my point, right? I mean, it's, you know, you can have the plans to build the greatest automobile that gets 50 miles to the gallon and runs on I don't know what, you know, water. But if somebody, if the engineers and the mechanics and the construction people can't put it together, then it's not going to run on anything, and it's not going to be what you want it to be.
No, and I'll say this as we throw it into break here, you know, and again, hey, I don't know if Davey Richards may have been taken out of context. That clip was all cut up there when it came to the video, so who knows what he actually put in that shoot interview until it's released. But with that said, you know, I didn't have a problem with the ether-soaked rag finish that Cornette had with the Briscoes a couple months ago. I've seen that, I think, twice. I've seen that three times in the last 20 years. Spread out pretty good. You know, that's what you should do. I've seen Davey Richards do a superplex off the top rope and have the other guy then superplex him out of the ring onto the floor and have a zillion different kicks that ended a match about 20 minutes after it probably should have. So, you know, hey, I guess everything's in the eye of the beholder, but we'll be right back on Ringside Wrap.
Georgia wrestling fans, you're going to want to make your plans to be at Johnny G's the first, third, and fifth Sunday of every month, 2 p.m. bell time, for Rampage Pro Wrestling television taping. And fans, if you're in Middle Georgia, make sure that you watch Rampage Pro Wrestling on Fox 24, Saturday 9 a.m. on the My 41.2, Saturday at 10 p.m. Cox Communications Cable, Thursday 8, Saturday at noon, and of course, Rampage Rewind, the one-half-hour show on Cox Communications throughout the schedule. Fans, be there.
Hi, I'm Jody Peterman. We know that no one understands what you need better than you do. We take care to guide you through the legal process, ensuring that you're able to make the decisions that are best for you. If you have a personal injury, criminal, or family law issue, please take a look at our website to learn more about our practice. We offer a free initial consultation for personal injury cases. Give us a call at 229-375-5680. We have a reputation for being accessible and treating our clients well. We look forward to hearing from you.
Hello, I'm Guy Terry of Terry and Peterman. At Terry and Peterman, we are committed to representing the hardworking residents of South Georgia in personal injury, criminal, and family law matters.
For years, we have worked with college students in this area to ensure legal issues do not disrupt their academic careers. We also represent military families struggling with divorce and family law issues. We rely upon over 30 years of combined experience to provide aggressive representation for our clients.
This is Miss Rachel from The Empire, formerly known as Platinum Champions of Wrestling. Every Friday night, The Empire presents the best in professional wrestling
at the Academy Theater in Avondale State.
We're also at the Masquerade every month or so.
Check us out on Facebook. Just look for Platinum Championship Wrestling.
And you'll get the latest details on all the hottest action from The Empire.
Formerly known as Platinum Championship Wrestling.
We get it. That's every Friday night at the Academy Theater and at the Masquerade as well every month. We'll see you there.
All right, we're back here on Ringside Wrap, the legendary Les Thatcher, along with me, Mike Sempervivi, and proof that professional wrestling has taught me everything. Every time I hear that music, the first thing I think of is Dusty Rhodes riding in on a horse. Hey, there's a reason I hate Footloose, because I hated Avalanche Buzz Tyler as the Mid-Atlantic champion, so every time I hear that, I have to immediately turn it off. This is what wrestling did to me, people.
Every time I hear Desperado, I think of Terry. I'm a big Eagles fan anyway. I love the Eagles. But every time I hear Desperado, I just see that damn funk going to the ring. I swear, you couldn't have matched a music and a personality any better than that was tied together, you know?
Did you ever use any at any point, or did you ever think about using it? I mean, I know that was, you know, and who was the first person you remember? Because there's always this talk about, you know, the Freebirds did it first, or the Ray Candy. No matter who it is, who do you remember doing it first, you know, post the 50s TV era?
Wow. You know, I think they played Pomp and Circumstance for Gorgeous George, I believe.
Yeah, they definitely did. But then I was wondering how long of a gap there was before it was done again.
Wow. You know what? Actually, I don't know. Jimmy Valiant did The Boy from New York City. Now, I don't know if he did that before the Freebirds or not. But that was one of the first that I remember, you know, of real value, I you know, that it's kind of, you know.
It was actually Richard said, you definitely after. I remember he used it in Mid-Atlantic, which, you know, it's ironic, too, when you watch 24/7. Another thing that generations of fans, and I guess it doesn't matter, but I think to me it does, though, because I grew up with it. When you don't have the license rights to that music and you don't hear Jimmy Valiant coming out to Boy from New York City and then kissing Tony Schiavone, or you don't hear the Iron Man, you know, from Black Sabbath when the Road Warriors come out. I don't know. It drives me nuts. I know it probably shouldn't, but that just drives me bonkers, watching stuff on 24/7 and things that have been re-edited over.
Yeah. You know, two of the I think the coolest or neatest or whatever entrance musics was The Brood. And I don't know what that music was, but I just liked the beat of it and the way, you know.
Oh, that was great with the fire on the stage. That was fantastic.
Yeah. But the music was good. And then the NWO Wolfpack's music I liked. I know I've heard that was from some pornography or something. I don't know what it's from. But anyway, it just, I don't know. Just and of course, you know, DX, I like their entrance music too. But, you know, a lot of it I can live with or not. It don't matter one way or the other. But I'm not sure.
You know, Rich Tate just threw out there, Thunderbolt Patterson in 73 was using Love Train, which I would assume would be the OJ's version.
Yeah, I don't think there was any other version anyway, at least not in 73.
I hope not.
Yeah, no, I would hope not as well. When you say... I did a six-man with five of the kids that I trained, when was it, 2003, I think, I don't remember. But anyway, they were saying, some kind of music. And I used The Ride by David Allan Coe. And that's what's on the back of the EPW T-shirts, is a line from that. If you're big star bound, let me warn you, it's a long, hard ride. You ever heard the song?
I have. I'll be damned.
Yeah. But the crazy thing is, Mike, when I first heard that, I thought, Jesus, that fits the wrestling business so well. You know, can you make folks feel what you're feeling inside? If you're big star bound, let me warn you, boy, it's a long, hard ride.
Man.
You can put that on my epitaph, kid. Oh man.
I'm trying to think from my youth. I guess Ric Flair, I guess, still is the one that for me, that visceral reaction every time I hear it. And I'm sure Flair is that way for a lot of people. But, but as we're getting close to wrapping up, you talk about Kaminsky Park and talking about another nature boy there, Buddy Rogers, who was one of your heroes. I just saw the edited version of that match again, and I forget, I happened upon it. And for some reason, that match, if I don't know who out there is listening to this show that hasn't seen it, but if you haven't, it's one of those matches that, for me, it's like The Godfather. If I happen upon The Godfather, even though I've seen it 17 million times, I'm going to sit there and watch it. And I did the same thing with Rogers and O'Connor again. And like you were talking about with Tim Hornbaker, you can watch that match today, and it holds up. You can watch that match today. It was three falls. I think it was about 40 minutes long in its entirety. Doesn't matter. It goes by. And you don't even realize if you're about investing the time. And then, so simple, at the end of that match, after the announcement is made and the belt is presented to a nicer guy, it couldn't happen. That's simple. It is arguably one of the more perfect wrestling matches, if you could call it one, of all time.
Yeah, they... it's funny that Sunday that they were using it down there, when Pat went to put the armbar on where he walks around, the spot I'm talking about? The Buddy's down, yes. And Pat puts the armbar, and he, walks around Buddy like he's twisting that arm.
Yes.
Yeah. Rip and I both said, yeah, watch this. We got excited, and some of the kids looked at us like, what? Huh? But it's just the timing, the facial expressions, the way they sell, the whole thing. And that's what I said to some of those kids down there, before I left. I said, it's the simplicity of the whole damn thing. You don't have to do all the crazy bumps and, kill yourself, break a rib. I mean, these guys had 60,000 people boogieing, right? And without all that, I mean, it was just tackles and Rogers begging off at the right time and getting his shot in at the right time and the way he sold for Pat, the way Pat sold for him, it was, and that's really what this business is about. And as Tim had mentioned, some of those subtleties are nobody pays attention to, and that's the shame of it, I think. Yeah, but that match, that's something that I've used as a training tool, and would again, under the same circumstances, as old as it is, because it shows the things that the foundation that means so much and is yet overlooked so much as well,
Go ahead. Flair, Steamboat, you could pick one of 10 of those as, ones I would pull out of my arsenal as far as, somebody, if you say, definitive pro wrestling, when it came to showing the your students' tapes, when it was time for that, what were the first one or two matches that you pulled out of the holster and said, okay, sit here and learn, maybe, one singles and one tag match where you're like, this is about as penultimate as you can get?
Yeah, some of those. I never had any good house show tags. I'd love to have sat down and made them look at the Andersons till they were blue in the face. But anything that I get my hands on with the Andersons was usually TV, which were semi-squashes to the biggest degree and short,
But to watch the way the well, you know, and part of it for me, having worked with Gene and Lars or Gene and Ole, was to be in the midst of that and part of that, and to, you know, to be into that rhythm of the timing and the build and everything was you know, so much fun, and you know, to try to convey that, I would have loved to have more of that. But well, the Rogers match, you know, Briscoe and Funk, you know, Steamboat and Flair, it's just that's what's missing, and that's where they need to. You know, we talked about the Matt Hardy interview that he did with Brian and Dave, and he's, you know, a few weeks back, and he said, well, you know, they need to go back closer to reality, and I believe that's true, and more simplicity. You know, I think that's you know, the whole psychiatrist thing with Daniel Bryan is meaningless. I mean, it filled some time.
Well, and the disappointing part is, you know, until however long SummerSlam is, and this is just, you know, leading into something, I guess, with Charlie Sheen, which is, you know, it's disappointing. And obviously they're going to have, quote unquote, star presence on SummerSlam, although God knows at this point why I want to see Brock Lesnar and Triple H, and God knows why I'd want to see Brock Lesnar afterwards if he lost to him, and being in Los Angeles and The Rock will probably be there and all of that other stuff. But we see Daniel Bryan in a position, and again, maybe this is better for him. Maybe he lands a TV walk-on role or something out of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And he's getting paid. So, you know, there's one thing to be said about it there, because God knows 10 years ago I never would have believed they ever would have had Daniel Bryan in WWE, and God bless it, they have. But the fact that you're going to lose him off SummerSlam for this is,
yeah.
It's just too damn bad.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, here's another thing, too, that I discussed with somebody the other day. Well, they brought it up, and when we talked about it, was he was saying, you know, after you've seen two guys wrestle each other every Monday night or every Friday night or every Thursday night for how long, why am I going to pay $50 to see it again?
Yeah.
No. And my answer to that is, I don't know. Why are you? Because you got $50 you don't need, or you just got time on your hands, or what?
Kill WCW. People forget that.
Yeah.
That mentality of changing TV, when they, I remember, and I'm a fan, and I'm just obviously probably a die-harder fan than most people growing up and a little bit more invested than I should have been, but when they announced that it was going to be next week at the Georgia Dome, all I thought about was, like, I was going to pay for that. And they did Goldberg Hogan and the title switch, and that was one of the things that, and people don't like Ring of Honor TV sometimes because of squash matches and things like that. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, we lost the plot in a lot of ways, and the reasons we're having so many problems is everything had to be given away and everything had to be crammed into every segment on TV, and that unfortunately is something that, if it doesn't change, it's still going to continue under and be bad. You know, it was bad at 2 hours, it'll be worse at 3.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like Sheamus and Del Rio. Okay, so, well, first of all, they're going to be in a 8-man tag on Friday, and another formula that we do all the time in our company, right, is to have the people either on the same team or opposing one another right before they actually want us to pay to see those people opposing one another. But with these two guys, I'm thinking of all the times they have Del Rio have to go with Santino for 7 or 8 or 9 minutes or whatever the hell it was. It seemed like an eternity, honestly. This is not the time. This is the time that he needs to put him away, put somebody away in short order going into this title match, right? Instead of filling, you know, this is not the, you know, okay, this guy is going to be one of our main events. You don't use him for filler on your television. You get him in there, he kicks somebody's butt, and you get him out of there. You know, it's
especially when he's already done that with Santino before in shorter fashion for God knows what reason.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So, you know, so that's, I mean, it's just illogical.
in terms of the way he presented. But I know this fan had said to me earlier in the week, you know, it's just I'm tired of it. I said, tired? What exactly are you tired? Well, you know, the watching these guys wrestle each other 5-6 times on television for free, and then they expect me to pay $50 to see them wrestle each other the 7th or 8th time. And again, you know, even the greatest, we mentioned Rogers and O'Connor. How many, if you put those guys every week in Comiskey Park in Chicago or in, you know, in Chicago anywhere, the amphitheater, wherever the hell they were having the matches, they also have a shelf life. Buddy Rogers, one of the greatest workers of all time, Pat O'Connor as well. But you can't do it. They couldn't do it on Chicago TV. Fred Kohler couldn't have done it on Chicago TV free 4 or 5 weeks and then expected you to come out to the amphitheater and lay down whatever the ticket price was to see it again, because they also have a shelf life, everybody. And I don't know, but I haven't seen Pat O'Connor or Buddy Rogers on the WWE roster lately. Or Terry Funk or anybody of that ilk, you know. It's not, you know, the weakness in the roster is not necessarily non-athletes or bad athletes. It's just guys who don't have that it factor to make you, you know, to draw you in and hold your attention. And by putting them together over and over again, it even makes it less palatable that I'm going to spend that kind of money. You know, it's just, you know, it's the old example that I use with kids a lot of times. I said, you know, you remember the first time you saw your girlfriend naked? Oh, my God, yeah. I said, you remember the 1,000th time? And I know the answer before I hear it. Of course not. You know, so, you know, it's a goofy analogy, but still it works. And you can only watch these guys so many times against one another, especially when there's no really strong thing. You know, well, I'm sure that you knew, like so many of us did, that when it came down to the main event Monday night, that it was going to end up being, you know, SummerSlam was going to have a 3-way dance, right?
Well, you know what? I didn't even think much about it, but I figured as much.
Sure. I mean, I didn't sit and dwell on it either, but I thought, where else are you going to go with this?
Yeah.
You know, is Punk going to decide that he doesn't have to wrestle either one of them because neither one of them won? I mean, that would have been stupid as well. But you know, AJ makes the announcement. And what I think about AJ as a GM right there is, well, you talk about a snap decision at spur of the moment. I mean, it didn't take her 2 seconds to come out there and tell you what was going to happen. I mean, that woman, she's not an idiot, is she?
Here is always cueing the music whenever it's always ready to come on.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, so much of it, and I think that's a problem across the board. It's not just there necessarily. It's, you know, it's wrestling, our business in general, I think. Everything is so formula, you know. It's like, well, this worked last week, so we'll do it this week, or it worked last month, so we'll do it this month. And again, I've said this millions of times, too. Any of us, I don't care if it's Buddy Rogers or Les Thatcher or anybody in between, you are limited in terms of your arsenal mentally and physically, and you do have to repeat. The art is not to repeat the same thing too close together, and yet that seems to be more of a formula in a plus manner for WWE than it does in trying to keep those things apart. It seems, well, it worked for us last week. We'll do it again this week, and then we'll do it next week. You know, what did show up to me Monday night while we're on that, you know, hitting Monday night a little lick, is conspicuous by their absence was the Divas, Mike. There was no, I mean, not that, don't get me wrong, not that I missed seeing a Divas match because I didn't, but it's just, I thought, wow, 3 hours and no girls.
Oh, good, God knows, and I know we only got about 2 minutes here, but, you know, God knows we'll have a 3-hour bikini contest at some point during the summer if, you know, the way they usually do things. But
SummerSlam, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I get in a couple of shameless plugs here before we bail out?
Of course.
Okay. Let me, this Saturday and Sunday, August 4th and 5th, I'm just up the road here in Waynesville, North Carolina at Smoky Mountain Championship Wrestling Arena. There's a show on Saturday night as well. And if you'd be interested, you can call Casey Thunder at 828-707-4548. Come out and join us. And then I'm going to be in Western Canada, in Edmonton, Alberta, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, September 14, 15, 16. And that's presented by CNWA Live Pro Wrestling. And if you're interested in registering, you can email cnwawrestling@hotmail.ca, which I assume is .canada. And Saturday, Sunday, October 13th and 14th, Rich Tate's coming, so all of you show up. Beer and chips are on the house. Blue Ridge, Georgia, NWA Deep South Championship Wrestling Arena. For more information or to sign up, you can email dscwrestling@yahoo.com or call Woody at 706-889-1803. Now, not this weekend, but on the Edmonton camp and at Blue Ridge, Georgia, the gentleman that I'm working for at Wrestling Cares Association in California, David Jackson, is going to join me. And part of that is we are hoping to find some fresh young talent that we can use in our tournaments come 2013 too. So it's a twofold trip on both of those camps.
Yeah, I mean, anything good like that, except for, well, no, I got to deal with Brian Alford this coming Sunday on Wrestling Observer Live. But I also have an audio, Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up on the site, and I guess that's it. So, Les, I hope everything is well for you, and in 2 weeks, can't wait to talk to you again.
All right, looking forward to it, Mike, and I'm going to enjoy the mountains, Smoky Mountains, and my family, and you have a good time, and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Yes, sir, and everybody out there, again, don't hesitate. Pick up those Tim Hornbaker books, too, as soon as you can. Good night, and see you next week.
For listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.